they treat people like they worth nothing.
Injustice kind of chose me because it brushed against me many times.
It looked like Baltimore had been in a war.
The loss of potential, not simply Freddie Gray, but all those young folks.
And here I am thinking that I'm supposed to be this thug.
A war on drugs is not, it's not a war on drugs anymore. It's a war on us.
Take it back to the street. They treat people like they worth nothing.
Welcome to the world that brought us Freddie Gray.
A five-part radio documentary produced by students at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
In collaboration with Baltimore Traces.
During the past semester, as part of our UMBC American Studies class, Radio and American Culture, students have worked on the World That Brought Us Freddie Gray project to produce a series that highlights the voices of residents of Baltimore City, who have all in one way or another been affected by the death of Freddie Gray and the uprising that followed. Yesterday, we were taken on a journey to explore the history of law and race in Baltimore. In this episode, we're going to examine how those laws have shaped police culture in the community. You're going to hear voices from the people who have lived and breathed Baltimore for a lifetime: lawyers, police officers, scholars, leaders in the community, and its residents. Here's Dwight Pettit, a renowned Baltimore lawyer who has handled many high-profile cases fighting against police misconduct.
You have to understand how police departments developed and why they developed in terms of property interests and in terms of the extension of the society's protection against the newly freed slaves.
I was a young kid, too. I grew up in Baltimore. I grew up in West Baltimore in the Reservoir Hill area.
This is Major Neil Franklin, a 34-year police veteran who now acts as the executive director of law enforcement against prohibition.
Most of the police officers that policed, for instance, in my community, were either from the community or close to being from the community, within Baltimore, lived somewhere within Baltimore, were familiar with the culture in Baltimore. Don't get me wrong, we had our problems and our issues, but in my neighborhood, we had a relationship with the police officers at some level. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were from the area and could relate pretty much to what was occurring.
Pettit speaks about the history of zero tolerance and its effect on Baltimore policing.
You don't have to have probable cause. You don't have to have articulable suspicion. Zero tolerance said the way to reduce the crime rate is just lock all the so-and-sos up. And with that, the police in Baltimore City went on a rampage. But this was a citywide rampage of locking people up for no reason whatsoever, other than just being out there and being black. Walking the streets, having an open can, chewing gum, spitting on the sidewalk. They went through and locked up hundreds of thousands of people who lost their jobs, who could not make bail, who were separated from their families. And this created the Baltimore situation in terms of them against us, because all of a sudden, the community at large, in terms of the minority populations and the poor populations, saw themselves as the victim of police exercise of undue force for no particular reason other than the color of their skin.
As we learned yesterday, the history of law is essential to understanding policing in Baltimore. What happened to Freddie Gray wasn't an aberration. The personal stories you're about to hear have helped us to understand current perceptions of police by Baltimore residents.
You know, I was first harassed by a police officer when I was 10 years old in the fifth grade, just walking down the street in my neighborhood.
This is John Comer, lead organizer of Maryland Communities United.
And it continuously happened to me throughout my younger years, and it never felt right. And I was always a fighter. So, injustice kind of chose me because it brushed against me many times. And I just always wanted to fight back. Sometimes I wanted to fight back in a manner that wouldn't be productive. But then I grew older and I just realized, it's certain ways to do it.
You very seldom see a police officer.
This is Rochelle Barksdale, a resident of McCullough Homes and a member of Communities United.
unless someone's shot or stabbed. You have to be almost dead. For instance, I had a burglary, not this Christmas past, and it took them 4 hours to get to my home. And I asked them, I said, well, what took so long? Oh, this is nothing. I said, it means a lot to me because I was violated.
I didn't see a lot of crazy things.
Taisha is another member of Communities United from Gilmore Homes.
I feel like some of them, not all of them, take their badge for granted and they just want to be bullies. I didn't see them beat up females and males. Last summer, I seen a girl get tased by the police while she was holding her daughter. And they treat people like they worth nothing. I didn't see them rip clothes off of them, check them. And yeah, there's some nice ones that do come around and talk to the kids, play football with the kids, stuff like that. But you also have the ones that take their job for granted.
The death of Freddie Gray affected the Baltimore community in many ways. People of Baltimore are still undoubtedly hurting. You're about to listen to a powerful moment shared by John Comer reflecting on the horror of last April.
When I all of a sudden saw Humvees riding through the city, riding through the neighborhood, and my heart dropped. I could cry right now. Because when you think about the message that that sends to kids and the rest of the community, that Humvees and tanks are riding through city streets for them, regardless of if they have a hand in what's going on up at Penn North and the CVS or not. But that sends so much more of a message that we don't trust you. We don't like you. We don't want you to go outside of this perimeter. We are here for you. These guns are for you. These bullets are for you. This armored vehicle is for you.
Once more, Major Neil Franklin.
The police are supposed to be a group of folks who are, you know, out there fighting violent crime, people hurting other people, in lieu of militarization. So, you know, in lieu of the military. But yet the police have, in some cases, become the military in our communities. We're not supposed to look that way and to act that way and perform that way.
Although the riots of last year are an anomaly compared to what police face on a normal day, there are still important issues to be dealt with in police departments. Major Neil Franklin gives an example.
We have given the police tremendous leeway under the color of law to virtually stop you anytime they feel like it, to search you anytime they feel like it, to say, I smell marijuana, so that gives me probable cause to arrest you, then search you.
Okay, so a white kid in the harbor got yelled at, punked maybe, and the cops fired with 19 and a half years on. But you can have 12 cops beat Tyrone West to death and nothing happens. And the system is set up to protect that.
Michael Wood Jr., a retired Baltimore police officer and a speaker for law enforcement against prohibition, talks about the error in crime-fighting theory.
Think of fighting crime like mowing the lawn, and the grass represents crime. The proponents of an aggressive response develop big and strong lawnmowers to chop down the grass. They may be good at it. They may be great at it. But they only see with blinders on. They hate grass. They mow down grass. They store the clippings in a bin away from the land. What they are not seeing is that their big, strong lawnmowers are towing a spreader full of fertilizer and seed. The fertilizer contains lack of opportunity, poor socioeconomic conditions, institutionalized racism, breaking down of families, hopelessness, overcharging, power imbalances, corruption of justice, militarization, housing segregation, feeding of the prison complex, a war on drugs, and more. They rarely, if ever, stand back and notice that they are making the situation worse in the long term.
The problem that we're now grappling with as to how we can move back toward the police department being looked upon as the protectors, to serve and protect us, rather than being looked upon as an adversary.
What can the police and the people of the Baltimore community do to affect change? Is it possible? Neil Franklin gives a potential solution.
Immediately, what can we do to affect change in police behavior, police reform? And that is through the legislature, and it, a lot of it has to do with taking to the streets, as Michael said, to force the legislature to do this, to start rolling back some of these laws that give the police so much authority and power over us as citizens. When you have a community that doesn't work because we've criminalized so many of its citizens and caused so many other problems as it relates to poverty and housing and education, there's so many other things that also need to be fixed and worked on within the community before we can have a community that can do a better job of public safety policing itself. And then the police are only called in to act and to work when things really get kind of like out of hand, which involves the community and really gives the community, gives policing to the community to regulate, to oversee, to control, and the police do nothing in that community without the permission of the community. But that's going to take some time. So initially, let's work on changing some policies, some laws, and start rolling back some of this power and authority that the police have.
People in Baltimore and across the country have started to speak out through organized protests to have their voices heard, including Michael Wood Jr.
Uprising has been critically important to me. It has fundamentally changed my life. And hopefully the way that it changed my life will also improve policing. But I've been on the ground with the protests in Baltimore. I'm friends with all the activists. And I feel like I'm getting like my actual mentorship, my actual education that I need to be effective police is what I'm doing right now on the streets of Baltimore, learning from the protest side.
You've got to teach history in the police department. You know, you've not just the history of Baltimore, and so that they, you know, for the community's sake and so on, you know, what is Baltimore about within these different communities and how did we get here? But you also got to teach the history of some of these laws that they're charged with enforcing, such as the conversation we had here regarding the war on drugs, which is, as Mr. Pettit said, it's a war on people. It's a war on black and brown and poor people. That's exactly what it is. You cannot have a war against this bottle of water.
Eddie Conway was born and raised in Baltimore, and as a former Black Panther leader and political prisoner who was released from prison after serving 44 years.
We don't replace one set of oppressors with another set of oppressors and solve the problem. The problem will continue from another perspective. What we have to do is, instead of divide and conquer, we have to unite and work together.
We've now learned how problematic laws and policing strategies in Baltimore create victims like Freddie Gray every day. We need to confront the root of these problems, because this isn't an isolated story. We still want to dig deeper to find possible solutions. Tune in tomorrow at 10 to hear how issues with education in Baltimore have had an effect on the community.
The World That Brought Us Freddie Gray is a collaboration between UMBC students, the UMBC American Studies Department, Baltimore Traces, and the Center for Emerging Media. Production, research, editing, and voice work for today's segment on policing was done by Jeremy Mosier, Charlie Klontz, Laura Osborne, and Brian Hargraves, with executive production assistance by Mark Steiner, Stephanie Mavronis, and Adam Dromberg. We want to give a big thank you to the people whose voices were featured in today's episode: A. Dwight Pettit, Neil Franklin, John Comer, Taisha Harrell, Rochelle Barksdale, Michael Wood Jr., and Eddie Conway. Today's episode featured the song Hail Mary by Tupac. Our theme music is by Mark Gunnery. To podcast this segment or share the series with your friends, please visit steinershow.org. And to learn more about Baltimore Traces, visit baltimoretraces.umbc.edu. Please send us your thoughts on what you heard today at talk@steinershow.org or by tweeting at Mark Steiner. Tune in tomorrow at 10 a.m. on WEAA 88.9 FM for the next episode of The World That Brought Us Freddie Gray. Thanks for listening.